Well, hey everyone, it's Nate, and I'm here with episode 372, the final episode of the Vinyl Guide for the year of 2022. And I think it's a fitting way to wrap up the year. Today we talked to Jerry A. Lang, who you likely know from Poison Idea, and of course there's tons of collectible and rare records in their career. But before we get into the conversation with Jerry, I just want to take a moment to thank all of you listeners and supporters of the show. 2022 was a fantastic run of shows, nearly 3 million podcast listens, and a slate of terrific guests this year, from Brian Baker of Minor Threat and Bad Religion, to Ambrose Kenny Smith of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, to John Dwyer of the OCs, to Kenny Jones of The Who and The Faces, from Sendog of Cypress Hill to Keith Morris of Black Flag, Circle Jerks and Off, Nick Oliveri of Caius and Dwarves, to Gerald Casale of Devo, and so many more. 2022 has been a solid year of guests and growth for the Vinyl Guide podcast. And again, I just want to make sure I thank everyone. And of course, our guests and artists who spend time with us each week and show patience when I barrage them with a bunch of record nerd questions. I want to thank the bookers and the PR teams we work with to line up these great guests. I want to give a big special shout out to our Patreon supporters, patreon.com/vinylguide. You guys rock. I want to give a shout out to our show sponsors, the teams at Groove Washer and Seems Easy. And of course, you. Each and every one of you, the listeners, for tuning in and helping us make and record history here on the show. Look, I'm extraordinarily proud of the Vinyl Guide podcast and what we've built together. I look forward to continuing to bring you podcasts about music and facts, all on our goofy little record collecting hobby. So again, before we get into the episode, I just want to thank each and every one for listening and loaning me your ear holes for some time each week. I also want to wish each and every one of you a great holiday and hopefully a restful and music-filled break. As I said, this is the final episode of 2022, and I think it's fitting that we have here on the show Jerry A. Lang. Now, Jerry is an absolute survivor. The man has seen a lot, lived the lives of many men. As founder and point person of Poison Idea, we talk all about the rare records of Poison Idea, the Pick Your King single, the record collection and hobbies of Tom Pig Champion Roberts, the legacy of Poison Idea, and lots more. Jerry is continually releasing music through his label American Leather Records, and his new album, From the Fire into the Water, is now available on vinyl. JerryALang.bandcamp.com. It features collaborations with bands like The Hard-Ons, Crime Scene, Softkill, plus a previously unreleased Poison Idea track, The Butcher. So again, all that's available at JerryALang.bandcamp.com. But also check out Jerry's autobiography. He's released a trilogy of books, Black Heart Fades Blue, Wild and True Stories of Jerry's Life on the Road and Recordings of Poison Idea. Those books are incredible. Black Heart Fades Blue, available at bookstores worldwide. All right, well, let's quit faffing about and get straight into our conversation. The Vinyl Guide interview with Jerry A. Lang. All right, well, this week on The Vinyl Guide, we welcome Jerry A. Lang. You may know from Poison Idea, but I tell you, he's got a new record out, From the Fire into the Water, as well as a trilogy of books, Black Heart Fades Blue. And Jerry, I'm reading these books right now. I haven't gotten all the way through. I certainly hope the protagonist survives.
Well, there's a spoiler alert. He does live.
Oh, man, so much craziness. And I got to tell you, the books are, I'm sure you've heard this before. I mean, you know, they're very rich. They're very dense. And they're not books you skim, at least for me. I sit with a chapter or two, and it's just, it really is well written. Did you have a co-writer with it, or is this pretty much from your pen?
Well, it was edited three times. And there were times where the last person, my friend George, who was helping me, he would say, do you want to put the number, the numeral 8 or the letter 8 and things like that, or spell it out, or would you rather put E-I-G-H-T? So it's like, it was that. It was like, do you want to use this word or that word? As you know, you read by the story, I didn't spend a lot of time in school. And I've read all the, you know, I love to read. It's, you know, and so I figured writing stories were like writing songs, and just try to say as much as possible in a little, you know, make it powerful and make it just like a song.
I mean, if you're talking about that's the level of editing, punctuation, a little bit of grammar checking here and there. But I mean, the story, the way it's crafted, and I think of an example, like you're not repeating anecdotes or there's no cliche type phrases. Each one of them is economically fit for the story. I don't know how else to describe it, but look, I'm truly enjoying it. And if this is your first book, wow. I mean, man, that is impressive. I think you're a natural writer, perhaps.
Well, like I say, I'm a natural reader. I've read, you know, just when we started playing music, it was the same thing. It's like, what gets us off? What kind of music gets us off? And it's like this. It's like, you know, Black Flag, Johnny Cash, you know, Motorhead, this, and we combine them together. And then in writing, I'm like, what do you like? I like the Beats. I like John Fante. I like Bukowski. I like, you know, Noor. I like, you know, that kind of just like, I, you know, Greek mythology. Put it all together and bam, and there you have, you know, the same thing.
Well, look, again, well done. And I'm going to put some links in this episode page for people to experience this this trilogy of books as well. And I would imagine at some point you're even working on a final version, maybe a fourth edition to come in another few years when the end is closer.
Yeah, that would be nice. It'd be a continuation of the, you know, I was thinking about that the other day. I was because I don't know, I don't want to give the ending away, but I was with my wife a couple years ago, and I started doing the label again, the Poison Idea of American Leather. And we were packing up, we had the Kick Your King records, the reissue of the first record we did, the 13 song, 7 minute record. And we were packing them up. I was taking mail orders, and we were doing mail orders, and I was listening to Odyssey and Oracles by the Zombies, and we're listening to that. And I had this record, this Poison Idea record, in my hand, and I just stopped and I'm listening to the record, and I go, this record is a perfect record from beginning to the end. This is such a magnificent record like that. And my wife looks at me, and I'm holding this Poison Idea record, and I'm talking like this, and she just goes, okay, like that. And she's like, okay. And I go, this is just, it's just amazing how they play this. And she thinks I'm talking about Poison, about Pick Your King, but I'm listening to the Zombies record. And it was, and then a few minutes later, I realized, but she was kind of looking at me kind of weird. And like, wow, this guy's got quite the ego on him. And then I thought, I was like, oh, you know what? I meant this record, this one we're listening to now. She's like, oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. You know, I understand. So I thought that would be, you know, just moments like that would be just to write about those, and the people would be there, but they're so, mm-hmm. you know, fly on the wall. So
how is it for you to revisit your older material, Pick Your King or Feel the Darkness?
Well, you know what, when they get reissued, I usually go back and work with the people and you know, try to, like Brad Boatwright or Jill Grind or whoever's helping us, or you know, we usually try to make them sound fatter. We burn the old analog tapes into digital, and we try to make them sound better. And, you know, like Pick Your King, when that came out, I was like, okay, that's all right. Let's move on to the next thing, and then on and on and on. But then I go back and listen to it, and I'm like, that's pretty aggressive music. That was pretty amazing we did that at that time. And I mean, it's honestly, you know, from like the Zombies to Pick Your King, it's not something I would sit around at night and listen to while having cocktails. I wouldn't be listening to, you know, I really never do. But one time I was going to a concert that we played at in Portland, and I was waiting for a bus. I'm going downtown on a bus. I didn't have a car. And these guys were driving by, and they saw me, and they were going to the show too. And they're like, hey, get in. And so I'm on the car, we're driving, and I'm listening to this music. I go, what the fuck is this music? Like that. And they go, this is Poison Idea. I go, oh, does it sound, it just sounds like a barrage of just like this noise. It's just like screaming. Mm-hmm. Yes. But you can see I don't really get that much.
When I listen to, I got to be careful when I listen to it, especially if I'm driving, because I will naturally speed up. And before I know it, I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to have a problem if I'm not careful. So with something like Pick Your King, Do you have all the master tapes? Do you have access to all those? Do they still exist somewhere?
Yeah, but like I said, they oxidize and they just turn into dust. So you have to, so we have baked them and we have all the files basically. So the individual stems, so we can, next year, what we did, this is kind of jumping ahead in the story, but we actually took the badge, the song, the badge that's on Feel the Darkness. It's like a anti-cop song. And we took the vocals and the guitar and had a Portland cop do like a techno version of it. I met this guy who was a musician and he just happened to be a police officer. And he was telling me, and I was listening to his stuff, and it's kind of sound like Skinny Puppy Ministry type stuff that he was doing. And I was like, that's kind of interesting stuff. And he said, you know what'd be funny to do is to do a remix of The Badge. And I was like, yeah, let's run, let's go with it. So I have access to the stem, the individual. I can, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you actually have the
Yeah.
master, the multi-tracks. You have the masters and the multi-tracks. So you could pull them all apart if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. 'Cause just again, knowing the history of Poison Idea and reading your book, and of course, there's just legendary mayhem around the band. The fact that those tapes exist and you know where they're at and they're actually usable is quite impressive. There's a lot of bands that I speak to that they have no idea where those tapes are.
Well, you know what? It was we caused so much chaos and we burned everything down to such ash that it's so hard to reassemble these this ash and find these things, because there was a time where I just sold. I was like, here, take this. I don't want this stuff. And then to soberly go back years later and try to find these, it's like a Where's Waldo type thing, or it's just crazy. It's
Yeah.
but it's fun. And when we did it,
Is there anything missing?
you know what, when we reissued Fill the Darkness, we had four reels. No, we had three reels, and in like the East Coast had a fourth reel, and I have no idea how this person got that. But we kind of put it out there on the internet that we were looking for this, and somebody offered it up, and it was salvageable. We, like I said, we baked them and pulled the tracks off them. So we, by the grace of Jah, we did it. So it was, yeah, we, yeah, it's we still, I actually have, I'm sitting on We Must Burn right now. And when that record label TK closed, I was contacted by this person, and he gave me all the negatives and the handwritten lyric sheets and the artwork and everything. And so this kind of stuff kind of just finds its way home. But it's amazing. It's amazing that we have this stuff after, seriously, it's like, there's one thing in Kings of Punk, there was a handwritten lyric book. I made this lyric book and handwritten cut and paste art for each song. And I would Xerox them off and sell them for like a dollar a piece. And I had the original artwork, and as the book says, I was pretty down on my t luck, and just trying to basically sell everything I had to stay loaded. And I was at a show once, and this guy, and I'm like, oh, dude, I'll give you this book for $10, this like art book that I did. And I gave that to I sold this to this person, and I never found that. That's the one thing that I kind of regret, Yeah,
Okay.
I was talking to Roger in Agnostic Front once, and he was like, "The one thing I don't have, I would love to get that book." And I said, "Yeah, I would too, Roger. I would too."
Was that for the Portland edition of Kings of Punk?
Yeah,
Because that
yeah,
came with some extra stuff. Yeah. Okay.
yeah. And you know what? We reissued that a couple months ago with everything in it. We got the highest resolution scan of that book as we could, and we basically, like I say, pour water on the ashes and they, rose up. But we pretty much put it back together, the original assembly of it.
So, American Leather Recordings, you guys founded back in the early 90s, I think, maybe even late 80s.
Yeah, early. Well, you know what? It was always us doing it ourselves from the Pick Your King, and that was Fatal Erection. So it was it was, you know, me and Tom, and we just wanted to do it ourselves. We were impressed by, you know, SST and Discord, and, you know, we didn't have the internet, so we couldn't see the way they were basically doing the exact same thing we were doing. You know, there's a video, I think, in Ian MacKay's talking about taking a single and taking it apart and looking at it and seeing how you glue, and, you know, and they were a little more, you know, they had it together a little more than we did. We just cut it and we glued it with, you know, but we did the same thing. We did the same thing. We Xeroxed the pages, hand glued them together, had our gluing parties and our record stuffing parties. And we did them by hand, each one by hand. And so that was Fatal Erection. And we did, what is this on? I have a record right here. Let me see. I forgot what label this is on. We did those first couple ones. We did like the Accused Rejectors was on that. And then we did, we did the second record, Record Collectors, that was on Fatal Erection 2. And then we did this one, This Drinking is Great.
Oh, yes. Yep. Split, right?
Yeah. And that was on Fatal Erection 2. So that was on Fatal Erection 2. And then how did we go to American Leather? I thought there was three names.
You had Shitfool.
Shitfool Records. That was the Filth Kick. Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, you know what? These three record labels are the same thing, same record labels. We're just changing the name as we change the art and just laughing about it because we heard what that definition was, and we were like into like this weird, you know, subculture of this, you know, subversive porno. And we heard something about these shit fool things, and we just thought that was it, being as, you know, juvenile and locker roomish as we were. And so we're like, yeah, let's put Shit Fool Records, you know. We'll never get signed doing that, you know.
So Pick Your King, as I understand, there were 1,000 clear and there were 700 black, but the black was actually a mistake from the pressing plant. Is that right?
Yeah, they pressed the black ones first, and they called us and they said, did you say clear? And we said, yes. Like, well, we want clear. And they said, okay. So they were sitting on them. And then it surprised us. We actually sold 1,000 of them. And we said, well, you still got those? And they were like, sure. Now we're going to charge you twice as much for them, though. No, they gave them to us the same deal. And then we did them in blue. And then, it was crazy. We did like four pressings of it, I think.
Yeah, because I've got a blue one. So, and that is a blue paper black vinyl. So that vinyl was technically pressed first, but distributed second.
Yeah.
And then all you guys did, I assume, is you used the same artwork in the Xerox machines, but just changed the color of paper.
Right. Yep.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, talk about do it yourself. Wow. That was really, you know.
Well, that's what Discord were doing. That's what so many other people were doing. And it sounds like you guys had those folding parties as well, to where everyone's sitting around the TV, you just give them a stack of records to put together.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, they kind of, I'm sure they had their art filed away and probably took care of it and stuff. And ours was kind of like, you know, I remember like waking up and having like spilling wine all over it and like having to like peel it off a table and stuff like that. So it's like we kind of, you know, the music kind of represented the life. It was kind of haphazard. So,
yeah. So that original artwork doesn't exist.
No.
Okay. All right. Now what? The
Jesus picture does, because that was from a artist in Portland, Michael King, who went on to do posters for Sub Pop and stuff. And he just had this really cool picture of Jesus. And I was like, can I use that one? And he said, if you give it back to us. And the Elvis one's pretty like public domain. So we, you know, but the original picture from the Pick Your King is still, he still has that. Yeah.
Now the letters that you put together to spell Poison Idea, that's pretty much the same logo that goes through to this day. The same, even the same kind of spacing and erratic placement of the letters.
Yeah, we did that for a poster. at this club we kind of lived at. It was an all ages club in Portland. And we had, it was probably like our third show, our third headlining show, with, you know, when we had what, 12 songs. And we were, I was making a arson, or not, a ransom type cut and paste poster. And we didn't have, I couldn't find a P, but we had a B. So I cut the bottom of the B, the capital B. And so the P, you can see at the bottom, it's spliced. And we pasted that on, and then the O-I-S-O-N, and then the idea, but the P was actually a B to begin with. And so when we laid that out, once we had that poster, and then we played our next show, we just took that poster and cut it and Xeroxed it again. And again and again and again. And then by the time the Picture King came out, we used that. And then by that time, it was pretty much set in stone.
Yeah. But even to this day, the P has that straight edge down at the bottom of the curve.
Yeah, that's funny. So there's probably no font like that anywhere. You know, the people who actually make font, they're like, what kind of P are they using there? That's really crazy.
All right. So yeah, we'll give a call out right now to our tech nerds. If you create fonts, then make a Poison Idea font with that flattened P. Quick question on again on Pick Your King. Now, there's some test pressings out there, handful, I think 6 or 10, that have Ronald Reagan's photo on it, and I think Tom had made those. If I understand the story correctly, is that right?
I believe so. I mean, somebody showed me one of those test pressings once that Tom and me signed. Tom signed it to me, and he gave it to me, and I, you know what? And it was like one of those parties that just disappeared. And then 30 years later, somebody showed me in some magazine or something that says, "Hey, here's your test pressing for a couple $1,000." And I looked at it, and I was like, "That's my test pressing. I remember that." And so. Yeah, we used to make, you know, little things like that. We always tried to, we liked the, I mean, we were impressed by the Misfits doing their, you know, their special little things here and there. Always, you know, 5 yellow, 5 red, 5 green, these type of things with this cover and that cover. And so, we always thought that. And you know what? We took the piss on the record collectors, our pretentious assholes, but Tom was a record collector too. And he would do that. He would have the UK sub singles with on every color vinyl, you know, because they, or the Generation X with every picture sleeve for the same, like King Rocker with like 4 different sleeves for the exact same record, you know? So that's pretty pretentious to do that. That's pretty silly. Does the song sound better with the Tommy James sleeve, you know, or the Tony James sleeve? Does it sound, you know?
That, were you a record collector? Now, I know Tom was, and he had quite the collection. Were you kind of in that league, or where were you at that day?
I had my records that I liked, you know, like, you know, I'd have my records that I really liked that weren't like really punk, you know, whatever. You know, my, you know, Mentally Ill record, I like that. So I collected that. And then I would have my, you know, ATV records or my, you know, Fall records and stuff like that. Or my Moondog record, from, you know, stuff like that. Just weird things that weren't really punk. But I collect stuff that I like. You know, like we were in France a week ago, and I saw on a little kiosk on the street, they had the first pressing of See Emily Play by Pink Floyd, and Sid Barrett's a big hero of mine. So I was just like, do I really need this? And I was like, yes, I do. I'm not, you know. So I guess I am. I guess I am a record collector, because I couldn't let that go, even though I already have one of those. I don't need another one. It's silly, but I guess I'm a record collector. It's kind of like coming to that realization, you know, when you say like, hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jerry. I'm like, hi, my name's Jerry. Yes, I'm a record collector. What do you know?
There are certainly worse hobbies to have.
Yeah.
So with Tom, you told a story in the book about him chasing down records from The Fix.
Well, we liked that record. Mm-hmm. It was a really good record. And it was very limited on Touch and Go, and I think those two things together were a big thing. So they were coming out here. They actually went down to San Francisco and played the Western, that outdoor show, I know. And they did some shows. Maybe they played Reno or something too, but they were scheduled to come. They had a map and they were going like across to like Montana down to here and here and here. And they had like a, some touch and go or something. They had a list of these places they were playing. And they were supposed to play in Portland. And me and Tom went down to this tavern and we stood out and we sat in his car and drank beer and waited and waited and waited. And they never showed. And I think they were probably thousands. They just skipped, you know, Portland for whatever reason. They never made it out this far. They just took a different route. But Tom found, that's when you could call people still. You know, just dial up the, you know, phone. He would call the clubs and talk to, like, who's, can I talk to who's booking your shows? And he's like, yeah, I understand this band was supposed to play there. Like, yeah, they canceled. But they would send press kits of record and some stuff. And Tom's like, can I send you $20 and get that record? And these people are like, back in those days, $20 was like for a record, you know? Of course, sure, you know? And so Tom tracked them down. He got a few of them. He got a few of them. He got one from like I said, like from Montana and someplace else. So he would call the clubs and talk to these people and they would send him the whole press kit.
Cause that record Vengeance, right? There's like 200 made or something. So Tom knew at the time that this was, it was it already collectible? Was it?
Well, when those came out, you know, like when Process of Elimination came out, they would say, you know, 500 made or seven, right. You know, whatever made. And so, you know, limited, you know, this. So, wow, there's none of those. I need those, you know, it's like I have one, but I need more now because I guess that's a pretty, the habit. That's a habit. But
so Pick Your King was repressed a few different times. So I imagine back in 83, 84, you guys were starting to see the demand of those records, those original pressings go up.
Yeah, you know, but we always like to grow and move on. And, you know, we could have, I guess, you know, if I knew then what I know now, we could have always had that impressed, keep that impressed. But, you know, it was, we saw it being bootlegged. You know, people in Europe started bootlegging it. And as long as it was out and people could have access to it, that basically we were happy with that. If they wanted it, they had it. Other people were pressing it. You know, we got a couple shady deals from people and they, but yeah, we were just kind of looking for the next big kick, but we didn't keep it in press as long as we should have. You know, we could have done other stuff with it. We could have, yeah, kept it in press forever. I mean, like I said, the Minor Threat single never really went out of press.
No,
it's, you know, it has, yeah, stayed in different lives, you know, it's like on an album on this and this. And so, but we weren't, I don't know. We didn't like to look in the rearview mirror of where we were. It was an ugly place.
Did you guys have like a merch table at the gigs? Did you sell a lot of the records at shows or was it all through distribution?
Yeah, it was all through distribution. You know, when we played shows, we would do like, sometimes we do like limited batches of shirts. We do like 20 shirts for a tour. We go down to California and we do like 20 shirts or do some around here. And that was about it. Things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, we kept it really, yeah, it was pretty cultish.
Okay. One question I had is Tom's guitar, that very unique, I think it's like an Ibanez with strange cutaway. Where is that guitar these days?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay, grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips tapes. And if they're not in stock, go to SeemsEasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. One question I had is Tom's guitar, that very unique, I think it's like an Ibanez with this strange cutaway. Where is that guitar these days?
Well, I had it. When Tom passed away, he wanted me to have it, and I had it. And somebody came over to my house to like borrow it and to keep it safe for me. And they took it upon themselves to give it to one of Tom's relatives. And Tom, I mean, you know, I was with Tom pretty much up until the day before he passed away. And I know that he had some nephews and nieces that he really liked, but he wasn't really always didn't have the best relationship with his family. And,
you were his family, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for this person to do that, said, well, I wanted his, you know, his mom to have it or something like that. And it's like, well, Tom didn't really, you know, care for these people. So that's the way. So the easy story is I just always say it was stolen. I just say it was stolen because it basically was.
Right. Okay. And there was only one of those guitars? Did he have a couple that were cut the same way, or was that the single only guitar?
That was his one Ibanez he had. But he played like on the Imperialist Pigs, his first band he was in. And the first couple shows of Poison Idea, he had an Epiphone. What was it? What kind of Epiphone was it? Was it the kind that Wayne Kramer played in the MC5? Mm, okay. It had like the whammy bar on it. And, he kept that forever, and he always was trying to fix it up and hot rod it. And he took pickups off of it, took the neck off of it for some reason. And so when he passed, I went to his house and it was sitting there in pieces. There was the body and the neck, and I gathered everything up and I took it and I brought it to this person. It was actually the guitar tech for the Foo Fighters.
Okay.
And that guy just put like weeks and weeks of worth into it, finding the original speed knobs and the original everything. And he just made it just beautiful. It's just like a brand new guitar. And then, you know, he went to give it to me like that. And I said, and he put such a work of love into it. He was just blown away. And he's just like the Holy Grail. He's like, I'm done with it here. He's just like shaking. And I go, you know what? I go, you keep it. I go, you did this, you worked on it, and you know, it's yours. So Tom would want you to have it. So this guy's got it now.
Yeah. And I think if I remember right in the book, he actually toured that guitar tech, even though he went on to Foo Fighters, he actually worked with Poison Idea for several years. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. He cut his teeth with us at the beginning. And you know, it's
what a teeth cutting that must have been.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, it's frustrating. It's frustrating trying to, you know, because there's all these different sayings and, you know, rock and roll, the band's only as good as its drummer, can only do this. And then in that case, we always had great drummers, but we were always, you know, snatching victory out of the mouth of defeat. You know, we were just constantly, you know. You know, Metal Blade wants to sign you, or like, ah, fuck Metal Blade. You know, Epitaph wants to sign you. Ah, fuck Epitaph. You know, it's like we would just always. Can you cuss on the show?
Of course. Yeah, go
okay,
for
yeah.
it.
So yeah. we were just always, like I say, we were always just. It was like we're like a hardcore Johnny Thunders. We're always, you know, he could never make it. Johnny Thunders could never get famous and popular. He's always cultish, and we Poison Idea was too. We knew it by the way we looked, by the way we acted, the what we would sing about, the everything. It's just like people were like poison. People wouldn't touch it.
But on the other hand, Johnny Thunders, his output, in my opinion, it has peaks and valleys. Whereas with Poison Idea, there seems to be a level of consistency to me that when I read the book and hear the stories and all the craziness that was happening around the band, you guys still always put music first. It was so tight. Everything held together so well. I always assumed that it was, like, for example, Feel the Darkness. You write in the book, the album was a hodgepodge of recordings and various members. And that surprised me because every time I heard the album, it seemed to me like to be a very well-oiled machine.
Yeah. You know, like I said, the person who helped us remaster that for the second the pressing, the double album, Brad Boatwright, who did Dope Smoker by Sleep too. He mastered that. He said, he goes, I could always hear these different sessions, and to me it sounded like one session. And I said, how is that? And he took me in the studio and he goes, he's like, listen to the EQ like drop right there. He's like, listen to the you know, the way this is here, it goes like that, and this song. And so he made that record sound like one solid record with the different sessions, but it was incredible that people, I could never hear it. It always sounded like one record to me, but people were like, oh, that's from like three different sessions.
Right.
And yeah.
Okay.
So it's finally, you know, it's just seen justice now, because now it sounds like one record. And I wish Tom was around to hear it like this, because it would blow his mind.
Now that record, Feel the Darkness, that was done with Poison Idea as well as a UK label. I want to say Vinyl Solution. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They were, you know, one of the people who worked there was a fan of this kind of music, and he signed a bunch of bands, like I think the Hard-Ons, Snuff, The Stupids, a bunch of punk bands at that time. And then he went on to do like Gunshot and Cancer and all these, like, just but the band, the label Vinyl Solution had a bunch of bands. They did work with a bunch. I think they did the Manic Street Preachers the first thing had something to do with them, and Damaged Goods, I think it was. But they liked us, and we did you know, War All the Time, and then we did Feel the Dark, and then we did the 12-inch single, the Getting the Fear, and they liked that, and they wanted to do, so we did Feel the Darkness with them, and then we did like a couple more records with Vinyl Solution. And going through them, they're the ones that brought us over to Europe, so they kind of opened the door for us. I mean, bands were going to Europe in, you know, 89 and 90. There were bands before that, you know, bands were touring over there a lot in the 80s. You know, Naked Reagan, Black Flag, a lot of bands were going over to Europe, but we, you know, it was like the book says, we were content just staying at home. And that's kind of what happened at the end too. We were over there, and then Tom was like, I'm not traveling over here anymore. But Vinyl Solution, anyway, getting back to Vinyl Solution, they were good people. I liked them a lot. The one thing that was kind of bad about it is we signed our publishing for Europe away to these people. I remember they were setting us at a table when we flew over there, and they were like, here's for this, here's the, you know, this and this and this, and here's for the publishing. And it was one of these things where we couldn't really say no. It's like, you're here, you owe us money, this and that. And so that went on for years. I mean, I don't think we've ever really straightened it out completely as far as the, you know, the European publishing.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But you guys have publishing from on the rest of the material. It sounds like Feel the Darkness is the one album, yeah, where that's a little sketchy.
Yeah. You know what? Like I said, we burned everything down, and we kind of painted the room black. We painted the room black, and now we're scraping off the coats of paint to see what's underneath it. And that's, we're taking care of all that stuff. And I like doing it. I like, you know, even though this is a mess in here, I like, it's my mess, and I know in my OCD way, I know where everything is. And I like keeping the records in print, and I like getting, you know, keeping it going.
Yeah. I, you know, with the book and of course the new record, which I do want to talk about this, From the Fire into the Water, watching you become this kind of elder statesman of punk rock, and you come across as very grateful very knowledgeable, very, you know, generous with your time and the stories and putting it all out there. I'm sure you're probably as surprised as anyone that this is the position you're in, knowing the road that you came from.
Oh yeah, every day. I mean, you know, I've just learned to never say never, because it's mind blowing. It's like I say at the beginning of the book, I don't want to give away a spoiler. It was pretty much my confession, my confessional. It was just like, this is the way it happened before I disappeared. You know, like Tom did. He just said, I just want to just disappear. And I was like, you know, don't, you can't do that. And he's just like, I just want to just go. And he did. He just went. He just like, it wasn't like he made a effort to do it. He just pretty much just stopped. It's like, you know, when you have an old couple, like they've been married together for 60 years and the guy will die. And then a week later, the woman will just go. She just goes. And it's just weird like that. And that's kind of what he did. He just said, I'm going to go. And I got to this point where I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to, I've done everything I can. And I was kind of in a corner and I'm just like, I really don't see anything else. And all of a sudden something else happened. And it's just like, wow, this whole thing opens up that I've never seen before. And I'm just like, this is mind blowing. This is amazing. I never thought this would happen. I never thought this happened. So I'm just taking it as a blessing and just running with it. And I try to do something every day that, you know, that makes me happy. So, mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, doing it. I'm happy. Every morning when I wake up, I'm happy. And every night when I go to bed, this is the best day I've ever had in my life.
Do you feel there's anything that's unaddressed or incomplete about Poison Idea?
Not really. You know, we had some, a couple of the guys had, well, not a couple, like one guy had problems at the end. And it's in the documentary, the movie type thing, that he just didn't like. It was a musical difference with a guy in the band. He, you know, when we, Poison Idea, we were always kind of like, everybody had an equal say. Everybody contributed stuff. And by doing that, you have five people in a room arguing about the smallest things. And when you make records, it's always like, you know, the drum should be like this, and then the bass player gets mad, and then this and that. So finally, like the last four years Poison Idea was around, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have to just put my foot down. I'm going to have to lay down the law and say, because we're getting new people in, and I would still, you know, what do you think? What do you think about this? And it always wasn't the best decision. And everybody had something to say. And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm just going to have to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a, you know, no one likes the boss. But, and that's kind of what happened at the end. And then somebody just didn't like the way the decision making. And so that's kind of an unaddressed thing. But as far as, you know, Chris Tense, Tom, Steve Hanford, you know, Charlie, all those people, everything, I feel everything was fine. Mm-hmm. They're all happy, you know.
On the new record, there's a new Poison Idea track. I forgot the name of it. Sorry.
The Butcher.
The Butcher. Yeah, The Butcher. That's a great song. And that's somewhat of an outtake that was laying around somewhere. What's the story of that song?
Yeah, we went in the Learning to Scream. That was like 1998, 97. It's like with Chris Tense, the original bass player from Pick Your King and the first three records, and Dean Johnson, the original drummer. That's from Pick Your King, Kings of Punk, and Record Collectors, that rhythm section. We got back together with Tom, so the original lineup, and did some shows in Seattle and San Francisco and Portland. And then Tom was, by that time, he was just like, I really don't want to play anymore. And so we just got this guy, Ian Miller, who was a Portland kid, who's a really good, actually now he's a rockabilly guitarist, really, really good at bluegrass. And we picked him up, and we did that Learning to Scream for Tang. It's a three song, 7-inch. but we also did like 8 other songs, and they were in the can and they were kind of unfinished and, you know, not mixed and stuff. And so I did the Portland edition, the compilation record I did, and I took a song off that. And then for the new thing, I took the song, another song off that too. So I still have 5-6 songs laying around that
could okay.
possibly see. Yeah. No, I asked, you know, Ian and told Chris and Dean that this is could be seeing light, and they didn't have a problem with it. So, you know, they were happy too. So,
okay. Are there any other, recordings or outtakes that you know of that haven't been issued that you think people may be interested in as well?
The Poison Ideas stuff, that's about it. That's about it. And it's not, you know, like I say, it's the Learning to Scream Poison Idea, the first, you know, the Dean and Chris. With Tom, there's no more stuff with Tom or Hanford or anybody else. Tom did this stuff when he stopped playing and I went over to Gift and did Gift with Steve Hanford. Tom and Mondo and Steve went in and did this record called Fatal Erection with John from E13. And they went in the studio and did 2 songs, but they also did like 2 or 3 other songs. So those are in the can. So those are like Tom, Steve, and Mondo. So it's like basically Poison Idea without Myrtle Tickner. So those are out there. So, you know, and now with modern technology, I could take those songs and go in and sing tributes. I have 3 songs and do a tribute to each single person I could sing a song about. And it would be cheesy as fuck, you know.
What plans do you have for American Leather Records?
Well, you know what? When I wanted to save it, so to speak, and bring it back and keep it going. So I was hanging out with my friend Terry in Portland, and he was like, you know, you should make a compilation record. You should do a compilation record. And I did the Portland edition, and I put the Eyelids, Fernando, Jenny Don't, Toxic Holocaust, Shadow House, a bunch of all sorts of different bands. And the record just flowed. It sounded really good. And it was a compilation record. Compilations, you can't file them in a, you know, they're always in various artists at the end.
Yeah.
So no one, you know, it has to be like, you know, Let Them Eat Jelly Beans or something that's going to blow people's minds. So I made this record. And then when I made it, my friend Terry goes, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you that compilations don't sell. So that right there, I said, well, you know what, then I'm going to start putting out other stuff. So then I did, you know, The Ransom, and I did some bands in Portland. I did Dissension from Los Angeles, the Long Beach band. For American Leather, I would like to keep it going. I'd like to do stuff that I like. And, you know, like I say, if I wanted to be like Fat or somebody and get a formula of these kind of bands, I could probably, you know, make a living at it. But unfortunately, I like music, and I was just like, I like this band. This band's good. And everybody else is like, well, it's not going to sell. But I'm like, but it's good. You need to hear this. This is really good. Mm-hmm. So I'll stick with that, and I'll put that out. And then maybe 100 people will listen to it. But, you know, it's not going to be, you know, Machine Gun Kelly or something where everybody goes crazy and buys it. You know, it's like that. So,
yeah.
But I'd like to continue. I'd like to continue and keep doing it. And I mean, I put the new gig on that. So I'm really happy with that, too. So.
Okay. Yeah. Look, I mean, I guess you got to be careful when you get into the business from an artist perspective, and then things start to push you into making business decisions that are better for the business rather than the artistic side. And before you know it, I mean, someone like Fat Records, they've got 6 people on the payroll. They've got obligations that they have to keep up. And so they do have to make those sort of decisions, where right now, I imagine with American Leather Records, it's a passion project. It's you're doing it for your soul more so than for a dollar.
Sure. And you know what? I respect that. I like them because they got it done. Mm-hmm. They took care of it and they did it. They knocked it out of the park, and they probably, you know, they got gold records and stuff. And I'm not a business person. I'm a music fan first and foremost, and then I'm a musician second. And I mean, I love music more than, you know, well, that's what kind of made Poison Idea what they were, was we were inspired by all this different music, you know. And on the Portland edition of Kings of Punk, we put the list of the bands that we like. And Pretentious Assholes, we put on the cover, we put the bands that we, you know, the records that we were listening to. And you can see, you know, like I say, we can see everything on that. You know, there's all sorts of stuff. So, yeah. You know, we didn't listen to Charles Manson, but he was on there too, that Lie record. That,
that was Tom's record collection, yeah? Does that still exist somewhere, or did that get sold off over the years?
Yeah, that got sold off. I grabbed a few of those pieces that I wanted to keep, a few things I still have, but he sold the whole collection to a record store in Seattle.
So talking about this new release, From the Fire into the Water, this is, as I understand, songs that you've done throughout your career with different bands. Is that right?
Well, I did years ago, this band from Philadelphia, Dare to Defy, asked me if I wanted to be on a record doing a Why Die song with Paul from Sheer Terror. So I did that, and it was, I don't know how many they pressed, but I was basically singing this song on this record that no one never heard. Then I, you know, I went to Australia and toured with the Hard-Ons, and we did festivals with Iggy Pop and Sonic Youth and Nick Cave. We did these big giant festivals down there, and we recorded a bunch of songs, and I was on their album doing the song The Blade. But that's in Australia. A few people heard it here in America. Then I would keep doing these songs and that song. And then when COVID came, people started sending files and asking, would you like to, you know, basically start band. Here's some music, listen to it, write lyrics. I kind of started some bands, some international bands. Savage Beat from Amsterdam wanted me to sing on a cover song they did. I did some stuff. I started this band from Belgium with these guys, Crime Scene, and it sounds like a, I don't know, it always reminds me kind of like Exodus. I always say Exodus because it's like something like Bay Area. It's like 80s, perfect 80s metal, that, you know. And started having all these projects and just different things, all sorts of different things. And pretty soon there was so much of it. I was like, wow, this is, you know, and I would listen to it by myself individually. And I was like, this song sounds really cool next to this song. And, you know, the BBB and Savage Beat, and these bands are all still making music. And there's possibilities that we could do more stuff. I mean, the Crime Scene, we did a full record. We did a full record. So that song that's on the record is a song off the Crime Scene record. Okay. So it's weird. It's weird that I don't know if there's ever been people who've like made, I don't know. I can't think of a band or a person who's done records like that before. Like I sent it to some people who played on it, like Paul from Sheer Terror. And he listened to it. And he goes, he reminds me of one of those 80s variety music shows where the guy kind of like, where the guy comes out and sings a song, and then ladies and gentlemen, we got Kenny Rogers and the New Edition coming out, and then they'll come out and they'll do a song, and then it's like, you know, next we have this over here, and it's like these kind of shows, because it sounds, but it all flows together.
Yeah.
And and it's pretty I like it a lot, you know. And plus, like I say, that's what I'm doing right now. And you know, I was in this studio, you know, 2 weeks ago before I rolled, and I'm still doing new stuff like all the time. And so this is just, it's kind of just what I'm doing now, basically.
Do you miss being in a band?
You know, like that saying, a wheel or chain's only as strong as its weakest link. And there's always that, you know, like the Poison Idea thing. I say in the book too, I was like, we played and it got to a point where we were just kind of going through the motion. And I felt like disappointed that people were disappointed. And I felt like we were kind of ripping them off. So I said, you know what? I got a band of people that were really good who have been playing over the years with us. And I said, just promise, give me a year, 12 months. And we're going to go out there and just blow the roof off the places and do it tight and just do the set, you know, think it out, write out the best sets and just smoke them. And we did it. And we did it. But there's always that, you know, I don't like being the boss and I don't like trying to police people, you know. Right. I have some, just promise me, you know, no hard drugs. Yeah, we promise. But then, you know, I'm the guy, you know, sniffing around. And I don't like doing that. So I do miss it, but I don't miss it. I miss getting that high and, you know, expressing myself and basically creating, being an alchemist and creating this magic. Because what you do, you take what's around you and you create something new out of, mm-hmm. out of this. But I don't like being a boss, and I don't like being a cop, and I don't like, you know, the responsibility stuff. So, but you know what? I'm doing it now. I'm doing this, and this is the biggest kick I've ever done. You know, doing this. It's something. It's the unknown, and it's new, and it's scary, and it's cool.
Do you feel that in some ways the legacy of Poison Idea held you back for some time?
Well, yeah, kind of. But I would hope that people, you always hope people think like you do. You always hope that, you know, if you see a television show and you're like, this is funny, I hope everybody feels the same way about this as I see it. I feel the same way. I hope people feel the same way, and they go, what's new? What's next? If this is good, continue. You know, why would you keep, you know, I don't want to talk shit about anybody, but like, I mean, look at like Black Flag now with like Greg Ginn going out there doing that stuff. He's trying to do something new, but still it's like people want, like they want to hear Nervous Breakdown. They want this, and he's trying to do it, but it's not working. You know, it's not really, I don't know. I've heard it. It's each their own. It's like I said, I don't want to talk shit about anybody, but I don't want to be a vaudeville act. I don't want to like just go through the motions, be, you know, doing that. I never did. I think that to me, that's the kind of a definition of hell, you know. That would be horrible. I mean, anything that's new, even if you fail, at least you're trying. And like I say, it's scary and it's exciting, like hang gliding or something, mm-hmm. you know. It's just a thrill. It's a rush, and it's you know, one of the scariest things I ever did in my life was I tried to do stand up comedy once, and man, and I bombed so bad, and it was terrifying. It was terrifying, and people were just like, they were like, yeah, very aggressive, and I was just like terrified. But it was a rush. It was such an adrenaline rush. So, you know, you always want to try to find that, do that new thing, no matter what it is. And I'm not saying you have to, like, you know, jump off cliffs or anything, but, you know, like in my life now, I'm, you know, cooking or doing this, or my wife's teaching me about, you know, flowers or whatever the hell. It's just like everything, something every day, do something new you've never done before. And it's keeps this muscle, you know, working.
Yeah. Yeah. I always remember the story about these monks that were in their 90s and they were starting to learn the Italian language, because why not? You know, you do have to step into the unknown, and it tests yourself. But if you stop learning, it's as good as giving up.
Sure. Like I say, you know, and you just lay down and give up. But always do it. And you know, there's a part in the book too where I say that I looked around when I was like 18. I looked at my friends that were settling down and starting to, you know, they go to college and settle down and start their family and stuff. And then, mm-hmm. and then when they get to be 65, that's when they're like, well, I'm going to take a break now and enjoy life. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to enjoy life now and do this. And then when I'm 50, that's when I'll start working when I'm 50. But I didn't know your body gets physically fucked up too. And then you're like, well, I can't put in can't be digging those ditches when I'm 50, but
yeah. Still, so do you miss playing live? Do you miss getting up in front of a crowd?
You know what? I think it's going to happen again.
Okay.
I mean, it's in the cards. I'm going to, you know, do something again. I plan on, yeah, with putting out the new record, I plan on doing something with that. I'm jamming with this guy right now, and we're like thinking, how can we make this into the next thing? So why not?
Okay. When was your last gig?
The last show we played was in New York City. The 2 months before COVID happened.
Okay.
So yeah. I mean, we caught that right at the, you know, we said we it was January of what was that, 19? That when COVID came?
Yeah. 2020.
Yeah, January 20. We did the whole, I mean, like I said, we did Europe that summer before, did Rebellion Fest, went to Japan. We did, I mean, did all of Europe, went to Japan, and then we did the Portland show, a goodbye show in Portland, Seattle, and then we played two shows in New York City, and that was it.
Those are Poison Idea shows, those in New York City? Okay.
Yeah, that was, we did. Yeah, that was it. It even said it was like last show. We're just like, you know, and it wasn't no melancholy thing. It was just like, okay, you know, we're giving you our last show. We're kicking ass. We've been kicking ass for a year. Mm-hmm. And we haven't done, and I don't want to brag, but we haven't done one bad show. We've been playing for a year straight, and we've just been stormballing over everybody, rolling over, and we did it. I mean, anybody who watches this and it was any of those shows, they know. You know, they were so, and that was it. And we just, it was like a job that I really, really enjoyed and a job that I wanted to get done. And then I had it planned. When that was done, it was done. And I didn't feel, you know, because we spent so long just, like I say, going through the motions. So now we're just going to give it back to the people and then go on to the next thing.
Okay. So Poison Idea is definitely off the table, it's definitely in the rearview mirror.
Well, like I say, I've learned to never say never, but I don't plan on doing it. I don't plan on doing it tomorrow. I'm not going to do it tomorrow, and I don't plan on doing it next month, but I'm going to, you know, things, who would have known? Who would have known I'd be sitting here today doing this? Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, I would have never bet on this. I would have said, no way. There's no way. So I can't, it's not, it's out of my hands. I can't, you know, seriously, it could happen, but I don't see it happening. I really don't expect it to, and I'm not planning on it, but I just, like I say, it's not up to me.
Okay.
It's up to fate.
Are there any current bands that you like or consider the carriers of the punk rock ethos that are doing it in a meaningful way?
Well, like what kind? What genre?
Well, punk. Like, you know, any young punk bands that you like, you're listening to?
Like Warthog?
Warthog?
Yeah, there's a bunch of bands like that. You know, there's like punk bands I still listen to that are, you know, and there's so many of them. It's like anything in that, like, you know, when like Razorblade and Aspirin come out every couple months, I'll look at them and I'll listen to the band. I'll look up those bands. And some of them really, you know, were like blow my mind. Some are really good. Some sound like they've been done before. But you know, when people ask me what are you listening to that's new, I go, well, you know, there's so much stuff that I've never heard before. You know, like, and I've said this, and it always goes back to something weird, like you know, like Iranian jazz from the 70s, something like that. It's like so crazy. I'm like, wow, where did this come from? You know, or whatever. That kind of stuff like that, I'm just like, this is amazing. This is just, you know, mm-hmm. like I say, there's so much out there. There's so much out there that I don't, you know. And now with the internet too, I just find this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
It's crazy. What was I listening to the other day? Some Turkish, like this Turkish psychedelic stuff from like the late 60s. So I was just like, this is really crazy to think of this time this was going on here and it sounded like this. But there's all sorts of stuff, you know. When I was in Poison Idea, this is like 20 years ago when I first heard that Harry Smith, that those box sets that he did from the Washington. He was the guy who went around and recorded like you know, like Lead Belly and stuff back in the day.
Oh yeah, American folk recordings. Yeah.
Yeah. that stuff. When I, you know, I heard like Doc Boggs, this guy who this old this banjo player, this like, and it sounded to me, it sounded like so gothic. It was like these murder ballads, and I was just like, this is like more goth than any goth stuff I've ever, like any kind of like, you know, Sisters of Mercy or something. Just the feeling of this weird like gothic murder, you know, gloom. And this was like in the 1930s. I was like, wow, this is nothing's new. It's all been happened before, you know?
Yeah. I was recently listening to some Greek music from the 30s that was recorded. I mean, and it's hundreds of years old, but it was just passed on. And they were lament songs for the dead. And there's so many parallels with that and the blues of the 30s.
Because, you know, like Diamanda Galas is Greek, and she kind of sings those lamenting songs. Does it sound anything like that? Is it kind of operatic?
No, there's no voices. I know Diamanda Galas, but I haven't kind of put those two together yet. Maybe I should, no, this is just on the Greek instruments. And it's music that they would play for the dead at the funerals, and it's just heart-wrenching.
Wow. See, that's what I mean. Yeah. And you know what, you listen to that today, you take that and you add your flavor to it, and just people keep creating, and that's how, you know, stuff happens. That's how, you know, new stuff is made. And that's kind of what I would like to do, something like that. I'd like to take, and the record I put out, I think that's, there's all sorts of stuff on there, you know, like the Syd Barrett cover I did,
mm-hmm.
on that, you know, and that was, I kind of gave it a new, almost like I told the guys, we did that song in 1.5 takes. We went in there and I played them the song. It was the engineers trying to play bass, or did play bass. And I said, and I played him the old song, and I said, when I hear this song, I hear like the Cramps playing drums, like a really primitive drum in the background, like a beat. Because Syd Barrett, that's really whimsical, and like, you know, he doesn't even, I think maybe there might be a bongo in the background, kind of pat the way. Mm-hmm. But I go, I just feel this crushing. I think this should be a crushing sound. And we did it, and it sounds crazy. It sounds like nothing that's I've never heard before. So that's what I want to do in the future. I want to start creating more, doing stuff that, you know, not necessarily covers, but just exercising what I,
mm-hmm.
what I feel. And that's what, you know.
So you've got this record, From the Fire into the Water, and I'll put the links in the episode page, and people can go to jerryalang.bandcamp.com. There's vinyl available, there's CDs, digital copies, of course. After this record, it sounds like you have a few other projects in the queue, possibly some reissues. What does 2023 look like for American Leather?
Well, I mean, we have the Poison Idea records. We're going in line. You know, we just redid the Kings of Punk record. But like I say, I just got the master tapes from We Must Burn, and we're going to do those, and then Confuse and Conquer eventually. And we got an old show from the Metropolis in Portland from 82, I think it was, 81, 82. Mm-hmm. And we found the live tape of that, the Reel to Reel. So mm-hmm. we're like, you know, because we just put out the live at City Gardens last year, from the, when The Beast Goes East, our first time to the East Coast, right before Field of Darkness was recorded. So we're going to put this record out, like with the first bass player, Glenn. It's basically the Darby Crash Rides Again lineup with Tom. Mm-hmm. We're going to put that out. We're going to put out, you know, the Poison Idea stuff is going to be, I think we have like 3 or 4 more records, and that catalog is going to be in print, and I'll keep it out, and all the records will be in print. But, you know, yeah, do this new thing, and I want to do some new stuff too. Just keep it coming, keep doing new stuff. And you know what? If I go out and see a band that I really like, and they think it would be silly to put out a record, I'll ask if I can put out a record, because I like that stuff and I'd like to keep doing that stuff. I'd like to keep creating, keep leaving these artifacts.
Okay. Because I know, like, Pick Your King, that's out on Jackpot at the moment. There's a few others labels that are put. So those are all, it sounds like those are all going to come back home now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, Jackpot did a couple pressings of it. And you know what? We should put that back out on our roster. So if anybody wants to, if anybody wants to have it, it will always be available. And, you know, so just keep them all impressed and just keep creating, doing more stuff.
Great. Cause I'm trying to figure out what a good copy of Feel the Darkness and Blackout Vacant is. So it sounds like it's under works. If I just wait a little, if I'm patient, that will come.
The reissue of Blackout, the double record, is fantastic. And the reissue of Feel the Darkness, both of those, I don't know if you've seen them before.
I haven't.
You'll love them, man. They're seriously works of love. They're works of love. They're complete. On the Feel the Darkness one, we have the insert of it. We have the notes that Tiny Tim's people sent to us telling us to cease and stop putting his face on there. It's like, it's come to our attention that you're using Tiny's face on this. And we wrote back a letter saying that it was no disrespect. It's meant as art. Tiny's like, you know, he represents love, and this is supposed to be a dichotomy of, you know, what you see in this stuff. And it was like, please don't get it. And they wrote back and said, go ahead, run with it, do it.
Jerry, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. I've always wanted to have you on and talk about some of the records of your past and get some of those stories out. The books, even if you're not, for people who aren't so much into music, just the stories and the writing, I think is very enjoyable. Again, it's like, is, you know, it's almost reading a chapter in one of your books is like having a piece of fudge. It's very rich. It's very dense. And sometimes I need a break after it, and also just hearing, this new record, From the Fire into the Water, which again, people can get at jerryalang.bandcamp.com. It's a great set of songs. It's worth it even for that, just that one Poison Idea song, I thought was incredible. And I want to recommend people get a copy of From the Fire into the Water. It is on vinyl for now. jerryalang.bandcamp.com. And Jerry, anytime you have a new project, anything you want to talk about, or, you know, alert the record nerds out there that it exists, please reach out, and you're welcome back anytime.
That'd be great. Thank you.
All right, there we have it, people. And by the way, I've since heard the new reissues of Poison Idea, the remixes. They sound absolutely amazing. Look for those double LP sets. And I'm going to have to do a follow-up with Jerry on the details of those. So much to cover in this band. All right. And again, I want to thank everyone. A huge thank you for everyone tuning in, and especially those of you who've been sharing episodes on social media, posting them in Facebook groups, leaving us positive iTunes reviews. A huge thank you to each and every one of you. And I hope you have a great holiday break. We'll see you in January with a whole new set of episodes. I've got some great ones in the queue. So rest up and take care of yourselves, and we'll see you in 2023. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.